everyone. How are we doing this morning? Very, very glad to be with you this morning. Thankful for your braving the little bit of moisture we've got out there. It's kind of Ohio's MO this time of year to either be snow or rain or something, but you don't have to shovel that, right? So we'll be grateful for that. But really grateful you're all here this morning. I ask you to open your Bibles to Genesis and just start there at the beginning of Genesis. It's going to be easy to find this morning. I want to talk with you guys, feel bad for you a little bit. You know, you got to listen to me three different times this morning. So I hope my voice doesn't drone on too badly. But I wanted to talk with you guys. I understand your focus this year was family. And when you think about how much the scriptures have to say about family, and really what's interesting is based on where you are in your life right now, when I say the word family, it means very different things for every person in here. Some of you might be thinking of all of your family around the dinner table. Mom and dad making sure that people don't have their elbows on the table. A proper etiquette is observed if you can even get your kids around the table still. But on the other end of that spectrum, family might mean that I've outlived all my family. Thinking of family is the loneliest proposition I have because I'm the only one left. And everywhere in between. And so I think a mature person that really seeks to be a friend to others tries to appreciate the spectrum that people will be on when you talk to them about any given topic. And I like to challenge a lot of times, I like to challenge what we think we know, because that's a huge hindrance to good Bible study. Because when we think we've got it all ironed out on a certain topic, we kind of stop drilling deep, don't we? Until something brings that back to our immediate memory and we're thinking, you know, let me just kind of fortify or verify what it is that I believe, and we go back to the scriptures. And so there's no way we can cover, right, everything that the Lord would have us to know about families in three lessons. You could preach every Sunday for your whole year on family and still not cover the entirety of the text. So we're going to do our best to look at some highlights that I think will be very valuable for us in a way that we might at least look for the year to come and things that we might challenge ourselves to, things we might be aware of and decide that we want to make a personal focus for ourselves, or maybe something that we want to be a part of something a little bit bigger, maybe in a group work or the congregational work, and how we might strive to have stronger families this year moving forward. So with that, I'm hoping this all works fairly smoothly. So if you're going to try to improve on anything, one of the very first things you have to look at is, what is it that I know about the topic? What am I striving to do? What do I want to accomplish? Well, if we're going to look at how we might become better as a family, whether by a unit or by individual, let's take a look at what that looks like. And so the idea, the lesson title, right? Surveying Healthy Families. A little loose. We're going to cover a lot of topics, but I want to ask you a question, and I hope you interact, right? I talk too much as it is, so this is the class period. Please let me not talk by you talking. So if I ask this question, is having a family important? Shake your head this way, but you're going to have to answer too. So is having a family important? Yes. Why? Why is having a family important? Now, this answer can be an inch deep and a mile wide. Blood is thicker than water. Blood, you know what? I'm not going to be able to let that go. So when we say blood is thicker than water, can I walk around? Is it okay if I walk around a little bit? Okay. So when we say blood is thicker than water, we use that wrong. Believe it or not. So I know what you mean. So blood is thicker than water because family looks out for each other. But I got to share this with you because it's so neat. This might be the only thing you remember all day. Blood is thicker than water. We use that backwards because we use it to mean that our family relationship is the strongest, right? Is that I'm going to look out for my family before I look out for others. When that saying was introduced, right, it actually meant the blood of the covenant of our Lord and Savior is thicker than the water of the womb. Isn't that interesting? Right? So that saying, blood is thicker than water, we've always thought that it meant family strong. Actually means our spiritual family. And I couldn't let that go. I appreciate you bringing that up. That's such a cool thing to think about. What are other reasons why family is so important?
You rely on each other.
You rely on each other. Now, to say that we rely on each other kind of begs another question. What would we need to rely on each other for? Why would we need to rely on each other?
The younger need the older to teach them, and the older need the younger to care for them.
Okay, right? So in order to get through this life, we're going to need some help. Like you can't exist now outside of the creation event, right? And we're going to talk about that for a second in Genesis. Like everybody starts as a baby inside your mama's belly. And then you live that life and you develop and you grow and then you break forth into this big wide world. And however long the Lord gives you, might be a day, might be 100 years in one day. You will never do that alone. God never designed you to do that alone. So we absolutely need each other. Anybody have anything else to add to that before we look at a couple verses? Any other thoughts that come to mind about why family is so important? No? It might brew on you while we're reading. So everybody turn to your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Somebody read for me verses 26, 7, and 8. Can I get a volunteer to read? If you're going to read, read nice and loud, but let us know what version you're reading from as well. Nathan, go ahead. You're one of the only names I know, so that's the only one I'll be able to call out. Right on, so Genesis chapter 1, 26, 7, and 8, please.
New American Standard.
NASB, okay.
Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful, and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over every living thing that moves in the earth.
Very good. Thank you, Nathan. So, one of the answers of why we have family is in these three verses. Does anybody see why we have families? We don't think about the fact that God commanded families, do we? We don't think about that. Like, because in our culture, and I was just talking with my mom about this last night, you know, in the American culture, we've seen civilizations just die on the vine because of their affluence. They become so opulent, they become so comfortable, because even the poorest in our country are richer than so many others around the world. We've heard all those kind of cliches, but think about it. In our culture, in our day, we can choose whether or not we want to have a family. Now, granted, now, marriage is a little bit of a different discussion, right? Because of some of the variety of teachings we have about being married, not being married, all of those different things, the pros and cons of both. But we can decide, well, you know what? We're just not going to have kids. And I worked at a nursing home, and it was really interesting when you would have someone come into your care who had no children and outlived all their family. And I was so grateful to be there because the bonds and the friendships that you can develop there is just so wonderful. But in the back of your mind, it's like, boy, this would be so much better if I had a son or daughter to share it with. But yet you see that from the very beginning, God knew what was best for man. And we see these patterns kind of unfold. Now, so if we start at the very beginning of a family, there's usually got to start with two, right? So the man and the woman. So somebody turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 2. Flip over if you have to. It's a little bit of a longer reading, but 18 through 24. If I could get a volunteer for Genesis chapter 2 in the back there, please. Version and read nice and loud for us.
Okay.
Okay.
Beast of the field, but for Adam there is nothing.
Okay, raise your hand if you've heard that before. Like, I'm really hoping that's pretty familiar territory. Good job. Okay, so who has a King James Version Bible? Raise your hand. Okay, good. We had to have a couple. Please read verse 20 for me.
So Adam gave names to all cattle, to the birds of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper comparable to him.
Oh, comparable? Who's got New King? Okay. Help what?
Help meet.
That's the word I was looking for. How many times when we read verses in the Bible, do we read it and we're like, let me just keep reading? Like, you ever get to lewd fellows of the baser sort and you're just kind of keep strolling? And young people are like, what in the world is that? Or Grecian widows, not a few? Can't you just say a bunch? Like, come on, like, why does it sometimes the text of the Bible make it a little bit difficult for us to understand? Quit ye like men. Okay, am I quitting? Or, like, is that sounds like a call to arms, but I'm not really sure. So how many times have you heard the word helpmeet used to describe what? The wife, the woman, right? Do you see that those are two different words? Help, meet. What does M-E-E-T, not M-E-A-T, right? What does M-E-E-T mean in the King James, in the New King? What does that usually mean? Suitable, thank you. So let's think about something. God looked over his whole creation and he said it was really good, right? I mean, God made it. It's really, really good. But what did he notice in this text? What did he notice about man? He had all his animals. And we can use animals for a lot of work. But what did he notice? Man was what? Man was alone. Man was by himself. So that was not suitable for God. So here's what I want you to understand. So in the Bible, we see things the way they're written, and I don't think genuinely understand what's being said because of the age that we live in. Because if you talk to anybody any given time, something blew their mind, or something was epic, or that was totally awesome. But was it really? Like, no, it was, you know, kind of cool. But we use just an overabundance of adjectives. We just talk too much. That's me. I talk way too much. But we don't take stock of the fact that the Bible doesn't make mistakes when it uses the words it uses. And I want to just challenge you, because I think there's a point here that we really miss. And we're thinking about the beginning and the start and an observance of families. It starts with a man and a woman. Now, whose image was this man made in? God's image, right? Let us make man in our image, right? The Godhead. And so in his wisdom, in his image, God makes man. And he says, you know, it's not good for man to be alone because there's no helper suitable for him. So God in his infinite wisdom, God in his immediate and overpowering intellect. Remember, the scriptures say that his thoughts are as high as above ours as the heavens are above the earth. There's no way for us to find out the deep things of God. So you take this great creator God that spoke the world into existence, and he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a helper suitable for man. You know what that really means in Bible text? That God is going to make the absolutely most perfect helper that man could ever hope to have. Now, women, don't get too big of a head. I'm just saying. The idea is that God knew what he was doing, and God designed the perfect helper for man because he was God, and he could do that. And so when we think about the word helpmeet, let's just stretch that out a little bit and say, you know what? This was the helper. This was the process that God chose to make woman. The most suitable, the most perfect, the most appropriate, the most apt helper for man. And so I just think it's important for us to take a minute and look at the value of what we learn when we look at how God created man and how God created woman. And when we start there and we are impressed with what God has chosen for man and woman, that begins our journey, I think, in the right context. So now we look at this family element. Let's move to this next part, okay? So we have the man, we have the woman, and of course in Genesis, in our first reading, we saw the command that God said, go forth and multiply, right? So the idea was to have children, appropriate the work. And do you remember what they told man and woman to do with the children about the earth? I want you to go forth and what the earth? Okay, replenish, yes. And so replenish by their, you know, progeny, right? By their reproduction. But the idea they wanted, God wanted mankind to do what to the earth in addition to populate it? It's an S word. Subdue it. So God gave man the power over all the world. But yet, you know, nowadays in modern philosophies, we've corrupted that kind of idea because we destroy the world and we abuse the world. And I'm not saying that we don't in some ways. But we've gotten away from some of God's original plans for what it is that we're supposed to be doing. And that's no different than what's happening under the roof in our own homes. So how would you define a healthy family? What would you say? What are some things that you would think about in a healthy family? Brayden, I'm going to pick on you. These are easy questions. I hope you don't mind. What's something you think of when you think of a healthy family?
Mom and a dad.
Okay, a mom and a dad. Okay, very good. We've got a lot we can say about that. We'll just put a pin in that for right now. Mom and a dad, a healthy family.
God-fearing.
Jump to the punchline. What else? What else do you have for a good family, a healthy family?
Communication.
Perfect. Anything else?
Honesty.
Okay, we're getting there. What's one of the big components of homes that is lacking a lot, but really makes the house a home, we might say?
Togetherness.
Okay, togetherness, which is a form of?
Love,
there we go. Okay, thank you. So I just threw some down. Like, I thought somebody was really going to, like, that's why I wasn't sure a younger point of view would say, well, a healthy family is healthy, right? They don't have corruption or disease or illness or things like that, right? It's supplied with the necessities, right? Food, shelter, water, right? These are things that we might say are the basis, right, of any family that's sustainable. Safe and nurturing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in both the next lessons. And then, of course, full of love. A healthy family is full of love. And you can't really get to some of these components without a healthy dose of open and honest communication. But, of course, then the criteria that we're most interested in, and I'm so glad it comes out very quickly, right? One of those most important pieces that we're interested in is a healthy family is one that loves and obeys God. And when we think about what that looks like, we think about, well, Jamie, that's easy to say. And yeah, we love and obey God. Well, we're going to just poke at that a little bit. Because I think one of the biggest disservices that we do to each other, like I assume that many of you have been coming here for many years. And I would like to think that many of you have wonderfully strong connections with one another. Do you even in the midst of those long-standing friendships, sometimes we can still be guilty of assuming too much. Assuming maybe somebody has it under control. Assuming somebody's faith is strong enough to endure the trial they're under. Assuming that their faith will sustain them during their loss or trial. And part of that comes from a relatively stoic generation. Not a lot of people run out and say, I need help, can you help me? Like, that's not how that works. When we're really suffering, one of the first things we do is just kind of draw back. I just want to hurt alone. I just want to be back here. I want to put up my bridge. I want to kind of defend the fort a little bit. I just need time to think and to pray and to heal. And those are all good things. Those are all good things. Because God designs pain and suffering and those kinds of things to teach us, right? We're told that our trials create strength. But when we think about when we retreat, those are places to visit. They're not places to live. And sometimes when we retreat and we withdraw, we tell ourselves we're okay. When we couldn't need more the connection of our brothers and sisters in our local family and spiritual family. And so when we think about that reality, we can't just assume that we all love and obey God all the time in easy ways. So let's just look at just a few components, okay? So Paula had brought this up, communicates. And I have to put a qualifier on that because, you know, I've been guilty of communicating pretty clearly, but pretty unlovingly, right? You can communicate pretty clearly at the top of your voice, can't you? But, you know, the scriptures tell us that a soft answer turns away wrath. And so let's look at this. So Colossians 3, 18 through 21, right? It says, wives, submit to your husbands as fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh toward them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases God. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. We're going to talk about these much more specifically in some roles in this next lesson. But you see this idea of this mutual, right, relationship. Everybody kind of appreciates the role and the place that they have to play in the family, and they try to treat each other, right, in the ways that would support those things. Do you take time? How would you grade yourself as a communicator? I hope you guys don't run me out on a rail when I say this, but I had no surprise that a woman brought up communication. Because for some reason, men think it's somewhat noble to be stoic at the wrong times. When sometimes, and it can be on either side, it really can. It's really more of a personality trait than I would give it over to the sexes. But if you're not someone who just is really good at expressing how you feel, work on that. Because one of the worst things I tell people when we do marriage classes and stuff before marriage and weddings and things is one of the most wicked, poisonous, and dangerous things you will ever bring into a marriage is expectations. Now that, you're like, wait a minute, Jamie, what do you mean? You know, I should have an expectation my husband to be faithful and all these other things. Okay, yeah, yeah. Every expectation that you communicate is okay. But how poisonous are those unspoken and uncommunicated expectations? I can't believe he's not doing this. Can you believe she didn't do that? I just don't understand why. Surely he has to know. If he loves me at all, you know, you can put any preface on there. Like, we've all had these conversations in our mind. But have we taken time to say, have I told my spouse, this is my need? We don't like to do that because we want our spouse to love us enough to already know our needs. How's that working for you, by the way, if that's how you're running that? Because promise you, it's going to be smoother. It's going to be more fitting to the pattern that God has given us for our relationships with one another if we effectively communicate out of love. And so that needs to be a test that we put ourselves against as a healthy family. It takes time to connect with each other. You know, I so bad wanted to put a Facebook emblem up here with a big sinister bar. Anybody know what a sinister bar is? Sinister bar is that big circle with a little line that goes through it. Like, no, that's called a sinister bar. So I wanted so bad to put some kind of social media piece on here. But I realize for you young people, I'm starting to look a little crusty because I'm always down on social media. But guys, let me just ask you to be aware of your behavior. Okay, we've all been to restaurants when we see the whole family at the restaurant eating their meal, not one of them making eye contact. Yeah, I just want to run up there and just take everybody's phone just for 5 minutes. And just, we are so interested in connecting, or so we think. We connect with this artificial thing when we have one of the richest blessings in our lives, if we have a family in front of us. Nathan, what are you thinking?
John Gruden, the coach, his favorite quarterback is his next quarterback.
Okay. Let me, I don't have it. I'm not sure what I did with it. So if it rings, I'll put it on. And by the way, I hope you put your phones on vibrate. So let me ask you a question. Oh, there it is. Good. Okay, make sure it's on vibrate, Mom. So when you sit down to talk with somebody, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to scoot up and I'm going to make eye contact with you, Brady, because I want to have a conversation. We won't get to talk much, right? I mean, we've moved away for a long time and I love watching you grow, but man, I miss out on your life. Does it feel a little bit different when I sit down but I set my phone on the table? Now, to certain ages, that would be perfectly normal. You know, because it's just what everybody does now. You try that with a Gen Xer or older. And then that phone, yeah, I know it's on vibrate, like, because that nobody notices that. You know, you're going to get that, you know, because, oh, hold on a second. You're right, because it's always whatever is outside of the immediate. Our kids will be the very first to notice our hypocrisies, for sure. But they're going to pattern themselves after your behavior. What kind of value are we placing on connecting with each other? I mean, you got all night long to lay in your bed on that stupid thing, if that's what you do, because most people do, right? Before they go to bed or the first thing they wake up. I mean, and we wonder why we have depression and anxiety and all this kind of stuff. We're not even going to get into that. But think about the opportunities you're missing to create and sustain and maintain a healthy family and a healthy relationship with your spouse, with your children, children to children, children to parents, because of that big digital wall that you don't think is there. But how many times have you, as an individual, started to say something, but noticed someone was on their phone, so you just decided not to? I've done it more times than I'd like to admit. Take time to connect with one another. Shares in Bible study and discussing godly living. You think about that. Look at some of those scripture references. Deuteronomy 6. If you guys aren't familiar, let's go ahead and read that part. So Deuteronomy 6 is kind of like what I call one of the ultimate charges for parents. Deuteronomy 6, listen to this very carefully. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Now pay attention, that's Deuteronomy 6, 5. We're going to hear that again here in the next lesson, but it's not going to be in Deuteronomy. Verse 6, and these are the words that I command you today. They shall be on your heart. This is God speaking to the nation of Israel. He wants these words to be on our heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on your doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, some of you may not like connect all those, like, what's a frontlet? Well, it's this little thing, right? They would tie onto their head that had little special verses in it. But you're missing what I want you to focus on. Is how often do you have to teach your kids about God? Is it Saturday night when they get their Bible out to do their Bible lesson? Is it, well, I forgot to do that. Is it on the way to the church building on Sunday morning? Is it even once a week? Because remember, we got to poke at this for real. We need to look at these things and ask ourselves, am I following this pattern? Do I see the benefit? Do I see the urgency? Do I see the importance of why God would ask me to do something like this and the frequency in which he asks it? You have things similar in the New Testament, like pray without ceasing. It's not that I'm literally supposed to be verbally in prayer 24 hours a day. I'm always supposed to have that in my mind and in my heart. And is that the kind of life that I'm trying to discuss with my kids? Is that the kind of example I'm trying to set? And I use this illustration. I hope it makes sense. Anybody in here ever used a compass? Like not GPS, like a real compass. Like a Silva compass or a Lensatic compass in the military? Okay, so you're familiar then, like if you do one of these numbers, right, you can just kind of watch the needle spin because the needle's trying to point where? Trying to point to north. And you know that like if you're too close to metal, it might give you a funny reading. Or if you take that compass and you take a magnet, and if I take that magnet and I put it on the north and I pull it around to what would be west, what happens to that needle? Follows the magnet, right? Because it gets pulled by the magnet. And sometimes our lives get pulled by crisis or by emergency or by trials or by loss or by panic or just any event that we don't really have a lot of control over, but we now have to address, right? We have to see this issue. We have to meet this need. And then that commands our attention. But when we live like this, when we try to revolve ourselves around God, what happens to that compass when I pull the magnet away? What does that needle do? Goes back to north. Automatically, back to north. So I might use the illustration and say that's kind of how our lives should be. When we're constantly thinking about how we might live out this focus on God and live godly lives, there are going to be things that pull us away and distract us and that are going to take all of our attention and energy for short periods of time. But when that's settled, when that's satisfied, when that's solved, do I naturally drift back to God? And I think that's a goal that we should all strive for. I don't need drug back to God. I yearn for that. I hunger and thirst for righteousness. I do all of those things that the Lord pleads with me to try to create a behavior that will always naturally point back to God. That's an opportunity to illustrate the health of a family. Practices God-given roles for husbands and wives. You're going to notice a lot of references throughout today in Ephesians. Ephesians is a really big kind of proponent of a lot of instruction, right, in the family relationship. And this goes back to Braden's point. You know, when we think about how it is that we define a family now, nuclear family, do we even use that term anymore? That was how sociology described it when I was in school. The nuclear family was the husband, was the wife, and was the children. Well, now, of course, you know, like we jokingly say, you know, parents nowadays have it so much harder because when I was a parent, I just had to talk to my kids about the birds and the bees. But now parents have to talk about the birds and the bees, the birds and the birds, the bees and the bees, the birds that used to be bees that are now birds that are with the bee. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Now, the family unit is, all joking aside, a disgrace compared to what the biblical model should be. But a healthy family knows better. A healthy family is trained by the wisdom of God to identify the value and the importance and the necessity of a mom and a dad in a family. And so that is a mark of a healthy family. Works patiently through problems together. This is a really, really important one because when you think about what makes an unhealthy family, you think about when problems come, communication stops, doesn't it? We just kind of wall up. And then we're looking out for number one. We clam up and I don't care. I don't care what they say. I don't care what they do. I don't care where they go. I don't care. Like, this has got me so upset. Is that the 5-minute bell? Woo, we got to move. Okay. So understand, though, let's look at this verse, though. Look at Ephesians chapter 4 for me. Go ahead and flip over to Ephesians chapter 4. And I was going to have some people read some of these, but I'll read them for you since we're getting short on time. 5 minutes though, right? 5-minute buzzer? Yeah. Okay. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness and patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. You know how many times we've read that and we've preached to the church about that? And that is certainly a valuable effort for the church to embrace. But how many families would grow in health if we treated each other just like that, behind the privacy of our own door? Be patient. Be humble. Seek for understanding when the times get difficult. So, of course, my consideration for you then at this point would be, do you have the courage to take a really honest look at your family? Do you have the courage to take a really honest look at yourself? Because one of the illustrations that I wanted to share with you, we don't have a lot of time for this, so I'll kind of hasten through this, is when I would work with families about trying to figure out a care plan for mom or dad or brother or sister at this nursing home. There was always this great disparity between the parent, or not the parent, but the sibling or the child, okay, that lived in town, that was there every day and answered every phone call mom made for the needs that she had, versus the sibling or the child that lived out of town. And the sibling that lived out of town, as the saying goes, God bless them, but they didn't have as accurate of a picture of what the needs really were. And so my point is that if you're not willing to really zero in, shut the bathroom door, and look straight at that person in the mirror, then you're likely not going to come up with the answers you really need. But if you're willing, and I don't know why this is the case, but it is easiest to lie to ourselves. But if we're courageous enough, if we're brave enough to shut the door and look in the mirror and ask ourselves, am I working toward those elements that make for a healthy family? Do a survey of my family. I think it would be very, very telling for us. So as we do this, I want you to think about something that I learned a long, long time ago. Military, you know, kind of teaches you to do things like by backward planning. So it says, like, take your objective, what you want to accomplish, and then where you are, but you plan that task. You plan the logistics for that event from and backwards, from the end to the front. Because what we do, have you ever read something that's familiar to you and you've skipped the part? Because your mind kind of moves a little bit faster, right, than your mouth is moving. Well, we do the same thing when we plan sometimes, or when we try to draw something out, as we maybe skip steps because we can't remember. We used to have to do these refueling stops, right? You got about 70 trucks in a convoy. They're all rolling down the interstate. You got to get those trucks off the road in three different groups. They all have to have time to fuel and get back into the convoy, and the convoy never stop. You know what's real easy to forget to plan for? How much time does it take to lose, to take away interstate speed, get off the exit ramp, and pull into the fuel stop? You multiply that by however many trucks you've got, you got a lot of time. But when I'm thinking forward, sometimes I just skip those things that just seem like they don't matter. But when we really want to look at something like a healthy family, and we're maybe in the middle somewhere, look at the end goal. Where do I want my family to be? What do I want is that ultimate goal for my family? Maybe my family's healthy now, but I want it to be better. Maybe my family's a wreck and I need some semblance of hope. Well, we'll begin with the end in mind. Where do you want to be? Now, I would argue, and for the sake of time, we're going to say that the goal of a godly family, that end goal, to make things real, real simple, is a family that seeks to please the Lord. Isn't that the easiest answer we could really give without getting into a lot of, you know, semantics? I want to please God myself. I want personally to hear, enter in, thou good and faithful servant. That's what I want. I don't want to hear when I run to him with my arms open, ready to see my Savior on the day of judgment, and ready to embrace him with all the love that I've stored up for him in my life. And when I'm ready to wrap my arms around him, he says, depart from me. I never knew you. One of the most terrifying parts of the Bible. Lord, haven't we done all these things in your name? And he says, depart from me, you who work lawlessness or work iniquity. You choose your own way. You choose that perverted gospel that Paul talks about in Galatians. You choose any version of this but God's version. And think of the heartache that would come from that. But I not only want to hear, enter in, thou good and faithful servant, I want to hear that for my whole family. So as we close out, I want to contend with you that what we want to do, our end goal, is what Jesus asks us to do in Matthew 23 and 37 when he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. We need to work on teaching our family how to do that. And then ultimately, when we think about the Great Commission we talk about sometimes, and we read it there in Matthew 28, when he says, go therefore and make disciples. What do I want my family to do? I want my family to be pleasing to God. I want my family to be entered into heaven. But while we're here, I want to be busy making disciples. Guys, thank you so much for your thoughts and your time. Sorry we had to rush through that. I'll do my best to do a little better next session. Thank you for your thoughts.